Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you lead it on when I'm falling down? Now the tears are falling from your face. I never learned from all of my mistakes. How we gonna carry on? Can anybody be this strong when we're falling down right now?
America today. God bless America and God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for joining us tonight for Continue Mission. It's going to be a good show tonight. So we're going to cover the current events. And, you know, obviously we all understand that the Queen of England died. You know, she had been the queen there for 70 years. So if you think about that, she was there a tremendous amount of time. But what I think is interesting is that she had some pretty good character and pretty good class. So a lot of you may or may not remember, but she broke with tradition after 9/11 of playing the anthem of Great Britain and played the Star-Spangled Banner. And that was brought a lot of tears to the British people who joined us to fight in this 20-year war. So, you know, we didn't start out as friends, that's for sure, and history will show that we fought a pretty bloody war. But Queen Elizabeth was top-notch, and I'm going to kind of miss her. I tell you, it was she's become kind of a staple standard person that you see, and I don't think that her son's going to do as good as she did, and but let's hope so. You know, she was in World War II as well, drove trucks and motorcycles. She seemed to be someone, you know, as you study her her youth, she was kind of outside the norm for what you would think a princess should be. So, you know, while a lot of these, the new princesses are making a name for themselves, Queen Elizabeth was doing it before they were born. So that's a good thing. There has been a resurgence in the need for coal. Imagine that. Yeah, we've got coal miners now that are working around the clock, 12 to 18 hours a day, trying to supply the coal that's going to Europe. Why is that? Because of Russia and China, and because there's so much stuff that is going on over there. You know, they're starting to realize that, you know, the green thing sounds really cool in theory. But then reality sets in and you realize, how in the heck am I going to make my steel? How am I really going to power these charging stations for these electric cars? Coal is going to be around for a long time. Natural gas is going to be around for a long time. Oil is going to be around for a long time. And I don't care if California restricts the sale of new gasoline-fired engines in California. I'm telling you, they're going to be sitting in the dark and sitting on the side of the road because they won't be able to power this. Or they'll do like what we've been seeing. People are buying generators and they're towing generators behind their Teslas. So, you know, I don't even know what to say about that. I like the Tesla car. Believe me, I do. I think it's a great, wonderful vehicle. I think that it has a lot of, but it's $60,000. Now, in this economy, you know, we feel the pinch of the economy. And I do, you know, I'm a retired officer, so I do pretty good. Plus, I work, but I had to go to work. My wife had to go to work. You know, because it got tough to make ends meet. And it's not easy, you know, raising kids. You know, there's no way I could go out and drop $60,000 for a new Tesla or a used one that I probably would have to pay another $30,000 to get new batteries in. So the whole thing is really kind of a farce right now. I own two little electric cars. I bought them. I bought them from overseas, believe it or not. Took 5 months to get them shipped over here. One of them works great. The other one, I'm either going to need a new motor or new batteries. I don't know. I'm going to have to take it into a shop and get it fixed. But you know, we paid about $7,000 or $8,000 to get those vehicles over here. We paid, you know, what you paid for the vehicle itself. You know, but they're just, you know, they're just like cruisers around here. They're like golf carts on steroids. So we're not going to be able to drive to the capital city in that electric car. And number one, it won't have enough juice to get there. But it's great to go up to the store and grab something, or, you know, go to our business that we own, or the library, or just around the block, because it's cool. But that's about all. I'm just telling you, it's electric cars are okay. I got a friend that owns one, and he loves it. And I've rode in it, and it's has a lot of power. But, you know, there are limits. There are limits. So when one of them's getting charged, and then the fact that you have to produce the electricity to charge it. So, and I just find it, there's a level of hypocrisy in most of these folks that are really pushing this green energy movement. Bernie Sanders. You know, and, you know, Bernie's kind of a cool dude to talk to. But I've met Bernie Sanders. I had meetings with him, had a meeting with him about 3 months ago on Zoom. Bernie Sanders is the only guy that I saw wearing a mask on Zoom. But still, though, he was cool. But he did take his mask off and talk. I don't know. He was probably in a room full of people. But he's laid back and. You know, and he fights for veterans. So whether you like the guy or not, or his policies are really bad, socialist policies are bad for America. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But he hates coal. He hates oil. He hates gas. I get all that. But, you know, they're driving high-end cars that are not Teslas. Okay? You know, they're driving Maseratis, and they're driving Jaguars, and they're driving BMWs to and from their homes in Vermont. And don't even get me on Pocahontas now. I'm just going to tell you, Elizabeth Warren is one of the biggest hypocrites when it comes to green energy. One of the biggest hypocrites. And that's the thing that bothers me about that whole movement is the hypocrisy. You know, if it was different, if they were actually living it, I would have respect. I've got friends that believe in it and live it every day. You know, they have generators if they need them, but they have solar panels. They have set up wind turbines. You know, they are capturing water, rainwater. They are, they really are living that out. You know, I'm not sure. That I can condemn them. As a matter of fact, I don't condemn them because they're not hypocrites. And so that's the reality of it. If they are true to what they, you know, what they're preaching, then it's easier for you to see, well, okay, I see the value in that. You know, but they freeze in the winter and they burn up in the summer. That they will tell you. And I've got, you know, we know there's an Amish community up here. You know, they don't have electricity. You know, they live in this, you know, circa 1860s time zone. And, you know, it's a little tough, but we still pick them up and take them to their construction sites and different places where they're working. So they ride in cars. At least the men do. The women and the kids, not so much. So for, hey, all you women out there in that green energy movement, you know, go move into an Amish community. You probably won't do that because along with that 1870s, an 1860s living standard, they kind of treat their women the same way that they did back then, where they expected you to stay in the house and take care of the kids. And, you know, they still use the word obey, you know, when they do their weddings. So maybe that's not your thing. I don't know. But it is what it is, folks. The reality is that nobody's truly living this green lifestyle except for the Amish. You know, they're really living that green life, or they're really living by that green lifestyle. You know, they get hot, they open up a window. They get cold, they start a fire in the fireplace. But then you got to burn trees, kill animals, unless you're a vegan. They plant a lot of crops too. But they use horses and they use these things called tools that you'll have to put your hand around. You get blisters on your hands, folks. I just can't see Bernie Sanders doing that. And I darn sure can't see Elizabeth Warren doing that. Pretty much anybody in the Democratic Party right now that's preaching this, that's sitting on Capitol Hill, is probably the biggest hypocrites known to mankind. Because, trust me, they are still flying. They are still taking Ubers. They are, you know, they don't even recycle. So, not to any serious degree anyways. Anyway, so we're going to get into some of that as well. But I wanted to make that point about coal, especially. You know, coming from the great state of West Virginia, coal has been king here for a long time. A lot of people have, you know, have made their entire lifetime in coal. Now, it's killed some people, too. It's dangerous work. It's dirty work. It's hard work. It's intensive labor. And in the past, you know, coal companies didn't always treat their people that great. But, you know, that's changed now. That's changed quite a bit. And, no, it wasn't just the UMWA. It is the fact that coal company owners have realized that there are certain things that you have to provide. And, you know, workers that are happy generally will work harder for you and do, they don't mind staying over 30, 45 minutes. And you don't, you know, you don't pay for that. You don't have to pay them overtime for that. And that happens quite often. You get paid, but, you know, some of these jobs, if it's 15 minutes after the hour, well, I'm in double overtime now, you know, or I'm in time and a half right now, you know, which is cool if you've got that worked out. But imagine in World War II, when all of these miners, all of these steel workers, all of these people went to work, most of them were too old to go in the military, or they had some sort of a physical deferment that kept them out. They worked like dogs because they were literally, our backs were against the wall. You know, we're going to talk about dictators. We were dealing with some dictators at that time. Coal was the basic fundamental building block of all those tank ships, boats, everything you've seen coming and going down the pike. The Germans, because they ran out of oil, you know, had a oil to gasification process, and they were, I'm sorry, coal, because they had plenty of coal. They were mining coal, and they were turning it into fuel for their submarines. And their submarines, you know, were pretty vicious for a while. So coal has supplied many, many things. But for us, thank God, it supplied for the victory. Same thing with your oil. Same thing with your gas. You like to go turn on your lights and they come on? I do. But I could live without it. I lived in the desert for almost a year with no electricity. Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm. We lived out in the desert like Bedouins. You know, we got there on, you know, like August the 15th. And we were there for right about a year. All in the desert. No flushing toilets, no lights that come on at night outside of your flashlight, sleeping under the stars through the various seasons. Yeah, I kind of like my house, man. kind of like being able to turn on the air. And I've got dehumidifiers that are running. I like to take the humidity out so my things don't mold and mildew. I got a lot of electronics, a lot of metal detectors and stuff worth a lot of money. So thank God for coal energy. Thank God for natural gas. Thank God for oil, because we have come a long way, baby. All right. So we're going to bring Rich Kilblaine on. He's been doing a lot of studying. I'm really impressed. But I will tell you, Rich, you know, I'm not going to go into your book all the way. But, you know, the Rough Riders book is pretty darn solid, man.
What chapter are you on right now?
So I'm on chapter 4 right now.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to remember. Is that Cuba?
Yes.
They got the Cuba. Yeah, okay. All right. So you're getting into the battles now. I think you're really going to enjoy the battles, but go ahead.
Well, what I really enjoy is the spirit of these people. So for those of you that have never read a book by Richard Kilblaine, I'm on the second book that I will read front to back and probably read it again.
That means the books I wrote about you only read the chapters I wrote about you, right?
That's it. Yeah. I just make sure you spelled my name right. And I just,
right.
But my kids have read, you know, I mean, my kids have read it. Other people have read those things, but when you do your research on individuals, you know, you capture their personality, which is neat.
Well, I was lucky. I was lucky because in particular with D Troop, which was from the Oklahoma Territory, I think the vast majority of the memoirs, diaries, and letters, everything that was published, I was really amazed. I mean, I found you know, several diaries or memoirs that were posted online or that finally released, and you can sit there and, like, this guy talks about doing this and he meets this guy. Well, this guy has his diary too, so there's a lot of overlap. I mean, we rarely, if you're as a historian reaching back to the Spanish American War, do you get a lot of overlap. You're lucky to get 3 eyewitness accounts from just one event. Okay, when I was research in the Indian Wars, I was lucky to have 3 eyewitness accounts from a single battle. And I'm talking about overlap from guys in the same troop. And in comparison with Arizona Rough Riders, you know, Charles Herner did an excellent job on that. His book rivals mine, but he did not have as many first-person eyewitness accounts from the guys from Arizona as I was able to find from Oklahoma and the Indian Territory.
No, I think you have a bestseller. I really think that this would make a very good movie. So what's fascinating for me is whenever I see those guys in their 40s and 50s back on the battlefields of France in World War I.
Yeah.
You know, I've always told you that's always fascinated me. You know, they were adrenaline junkies, weren't they?
Well, adventurers, yes. Well, you know, and I point this out. I said, you know, you think of all those millionaires and the Ivy League athletes that they went in there because of the celebrity status of Roosevelt. But no, they got the bug. I mean, once you've answered the call of the bugle, I mean, how many Vietnam veterans do we know, gun truck guys, that we know, when they watched those ambushes in Iraq, had this earning to go over there? And we know one that did. He worked with you, Larry Fine, okay? You know, he got the privilege to go work with you, you know, get involved in this. But, you know, these guys all keep thinking, like, I know how to do that. I know how to solve that problem. You know, they're going, like, okay, you're in your 60s now, okay? You don't need to be going over there. And they're like, I can help. And there's something once you've answered that call to the bugle, there's something that rouses that spirit in you. You just always want to keep going back. And you see that with that surprised me too. None of the other books have addressed that. And for me, when you look, I go, you got that from the opening chapter. I described
right.
that. O.G. Palmer, who is a battalion commander, machine gun battalion commander.
Yeah, machine gun battalion.
And he's reflecting about all the other guys from D Troop that are serving over there. Well, when you get to the last chapter, that's where I go down, I break it down, you know, how many of them ended up receiving the Medal of Honor. But it's amazing how many of them, and their story, why they went back, okay, why they entered into the military.
Yeah, well, I mean, and
you'd be surprised how many actually stayed on active duty as a result. They got the bug, and they're like, hey, I like this. Palmer's one of my favorites. Because he started out, his father was a judge, so he goes to law school. But his heart is, he paid his way, you know, he worked as a teacher during this, while he's going to school, and his heart was in education, and that's why I think I identified with him. But when the war broke out, because his father was a Civil War vet, he had to go, and he had to resign his post to go. He was the principal. No, the superintendent. He was a school superintendent, and he's resigned his post to go in as an enlisted man. And then they made him the first sergeant. And I mean, he's got wife, kids. And there's no Soldier Sailors Relief Act like there was after during World War II. There's no job. They gave his job to somebody else as soon as he left. He has no. And that war was, you know, from the time he enlisted to the time he went to war, came back, was 5 months. He has no job when he comes back. Okay, he's now appealing to the governor like, hey, I got to do something. So they give him a government job. But what he really wanted was to go back on active duty. And he does.
Wow.
He gets the commission. Yeah, he got the commission. And, you know, because the expansion of the Army for the Philippine insurrection, you know, when on active duty. It was the millionaires and the Ivy Leaguers who they got out, went back to their whatever their trade was, you know, making money.
Right.
But when World War I broke out, they came back. And what's funny is they all made, like, colonel, lieutenant colonel or colonel, except, and we had a show about the Lost Battalion and Captain McGurdy. The only one that got a commission but didn't make it to colonel was McGurdy. But, hey, he was a stockbroker, and he ends up getting the Medal of Honor. He's one of the two Medal of Honor recipients for the the Lost Battalion.
Yeah. Well, he was wounded pretty good, too, during that battle, from my recollection.
I think he the difference between him – and what's the commander of the Lost Battalion?
Whittlesey.
I forgot his name.
Whittlesey,
yeah. The difference is he actually had previous combat experience. So he had a little bit of an idea of what he was supposed to do. Where Whittlesey had no previous combat experience. And the whole defensive line was bad. Just really, really bad. And Whittlesey... I mean, you know, when you read about what he did, I mean, he's out going on and checking on people. He's doing what he learned from Roosevelt, okay? Now, especially the battles, Cuba and stuff, you know, you will be really impressed with how Roosevelt evolves, okay? And I'm sure if there's any one character in that book who evolves, changes the most, it is Roosevelt.
Well, and he had an interesting life, you know, even after that. So it's just well, so we've got a great topic tonight. So we're going to cover current events, and we're going to talk about the rise and the fall of dictators. Now, you've done a lot of research on this. And I'm just going to tell everybody right now, if your feelings are easily hurt, you might as well hang that damn thing up now, because I'm just telling you, it's going to get rough.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what party you belong to, okay? Yeah. We're going to bust on everybody tonight.
So, hang on, and we're going to roll with it. But I just find it fascinating, you know, as I'm going around here, Rich, I'm watching everything that's going on, you know, obviously, I there's a lot of dictators or dictator types on both sides. And, you know, they've become these tribes. It's kind of like the tribal warfare. You know, you don't fit the tribe. You know, you cannot be in here. And it's, there's no middle of the road with the Democrat and Republican Party. You know, the Democrat Party has slipped into, you know, almost full-blown socialism and communism. And the Republican Party, you know, they call them fascists, and maybe there are some fascist qualities in some of them, you know, just to be very honest with you. I mean, let me
support you on what you just said. See, mm-hmm. I'm going to agree and disagree with you. All right. The disagree is not all the Democrats are bad. There's a lot of moderate Democrats, okay? And, you know, Joe Biden last week, he was vilifying the extremists, the MAGA Republicans, okay? But here's the problem. Where we are now is you're either for the party or not, okay? And so whoever dominates the party, everybody has to vote accordingly, okay? So you could be a moderate Republican, but, Trump now rules the Republican Party. And they know, I will tell you this, the Republicans saw it. Well, if you go and you listen to Lindsey Graham and all these guys, you know, who were, you know, criticizing Trump, as soon as Trump got the nomination, they all fell in line because they realized the party had to be unified, okay? So,
right.
Like when Biden is, you know, he the next day, you know, he and his press secretary are saying, no, we're not divide, we're not divisive. Yeah, you were, because here's the problem. You're trying to vilify the extreme right, the populists. That's what they really are, the populists. They're not extreme. In a way, but they're populists. They're the people. It's the people's. It's a populist. The Republicans have become the people's party, the workers' party, which used to be what the Democrats were. The Democrats have shifted over to becoming the urban elite, okay? And mm-hmm. But the thing was, the Republicans knew if they were divided, they would lose. So they have rallied around whoever is the dominant voice in the Republican Party. Whereas you look at the Democrats, and we discussed that last week, is they're split. They're split between the progressives and the moderates, okay? So what I believe Biden was trying to do is unite them into a single voice, a single party, through their fear or hatred of Trump and his supporters, okay? So he's trying to unify this party. Well, so the reality is no one's allowed to really vote or express their own views anymore, because once they get into a party, they have to support that party. Okay, it's all or nothing now. The Southern Democrats were, you know, Blue Dog Democrats. They were Democrats in name only. They voted. They were conservative, and they devoted like Republicans, okay? That's all changed. That is all changed. No one's allowed to vote according to their own conscience anymore if you belong to a party.
Right.
Right? So they're all guilty.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, you've done some research What makes dictators, and where did all this kind of start? I know that we were going to go into a little bit about Christianity in Rome 385 AD, but you know, the LGBTQ XYZ or whatever. I mean, I don't.
Right.
I'm not making
group.
Fun of these.
Yeah,
folks.
We just call them the Alphabet Group.
The right. Alphabet Group. You're right. If you say, you know, here's the deal.
Well, let's save that for when we just.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but I want to lay the historical groundwork for it. So when you see, I'm going to pick on the early Catholic Church. When I say the early Catholic Church, I'm talking up to the Protestant Reformation, okay? Where you only had, there was one religion. Take it or get excommunicated, okay? And the rise of that, and you can see the parallels between the rise of Christianity and the Alphabet Group. Because, okay, so we start out, since we're on that, I'll try to get through this real quick, and then we can go talk about, how dictators rise and hold on to power. All right, so if you, you know, here it is, Rome. Rome was an interesting place. I don't think Christianity could have spread more rapidly at any other time than it did during the Roman Empire. And yet, Rome was tolerant of all religions except Christianity. You know, you want to talk about finding a scapegoat. You know, see, the Romans, they just believed in all gods. They adopted gods from the Greeks and from everybody else. Mithra, one of the most popular gods among Roman soldiers, was a Middle Eastern god, okay, which has very strong parallels between Christianity. It's about sacrifice, and the value systems among the Mithra worship matches very closely with Christianity, which is why I believe Roman officers, Roman centurions, when they came across Christianity and they came across, you know, they found out like, okay, wait a minute, I belong to this religion, and here's a new religion that not only matches this, but I'm believing, you know, something superficial, but here's like, there was this demigod that existed, okay, a man that became God, okay, that's how they would believe it. And keep in mind, among the Jews, this is why the Jews rejected Christ, because he to be the living Son of God. The Jews are like, that's sacrilegious, okay?
Right.
But you go up to a Roman and you say, a man can become God. They said, yeah, we know that. All the Caesars become gods, okay? Somebody performs miracles or magic and stuff like that, he becomes a god, okay? They believe that. So if you walk up there and you start telling them about this man, Jesus, and he going, you know, he healed the sick, and he cured the lame, and he healed the blind, and he rose a man from the dead. They're going, oh, yeah, that guy was a god. Okay, we can see that. They believed in demigods. You know, Hercules was a demigod. They believed that, and you're going, yeah, he's the Son of God. Oh, yeah. Lots of their demigods are sons of God. Hercules is a son of a god, okay? So that was all believable. You walk around and tell them about Christ, and they're going, yeah, we can believe that. Okay, and then the Romans are going, yeah, but this guy's values match with the belief system we have with, which we don't have a whole lot about, the Mithra cult, okay? So that's why I think the Roman centurions, you know, adopted Christianity so well. But the problem was, and I think it starts with Nero, who needs a scapegoat. And where you take an empire that is supposed to be tolerant of all these religions, and they decide to pick on Christians. And they do so periodically, you know, there's like surges. Okay, let's pick on the Christians now. Okay, we're done with that. But a lot of what happened up until the time of Constantine, and he converted to Christianity in 312 AD. I had to look it up. All right. And that was not only did they persecute him. I mean, of course, we know about put to death, put in the Colosseum, had him eaten by lions and things like that. But for the most part, it's just being martyred, being executed, and having your property confiscated. Now, when Constantine converted to Christianity, the first Roman emperor to do so, he did not establish Christianity as the state religion. All he did was you have to now tolerate Christianity. You can't persecute Christians. Okay, you can't take their give the property back to them. The property you took to them, give it back to them. Okay, so all Constantine did with the laws is make Christianity acceptable, to tolerate it. Okay, now if you look at the alphabet group. You know, and I used to call them that because they keep adding more letters to it. LBTQ, T, I think, is T is a new letter they added. Okay. The thing is, not too long ago, or belonged to one of those groups. I'm telling you, not too long ago. And you know, we look at that, you know, or, it was something that was shunned, okay? And I get it. You know, now we're a lot more open-minded. And only recently are we now at the point where we're going to say, you know what? Let them get married. Okay, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, what they want to do, that's becoming acceptable. All right? So the struggle, and a lot of it, takes place in the 60s. 60s is this revolutionary time frame. You know, war on poverty, you know, equal rights, not just for minorities, but also, you know, for people of different sexual persuasions and things like that. Okay, got it. We're there. But I'm beginning to see parallels between that group and what happened to the Christians, okay? So once they gained acceptability, it's okay to be a Christian now. No one's going to put you in the Colosseum with the lions and that, or burn you and up on a cross, okay, use you as a street lamp. But in 385 AD, we go from 312 Constantine to 385, and it was Father Michael is not here. He's got a friend who passed away, and that he's at his funeral tonight. Okay, he returns tomorrow. Okay, for any of you who want to follow him, follow him on his sermon, Father Michael Pacella. He will be back on Sunday. All right. So anyway, he told me it was 385 that Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire. Okay, and it was around the turn of the century that they had Rome no longer was the capital of the Roman Empire, but they split it between two brothers, one in Milan, France, the Western Roman Empire, and then the Eastern Roman Empire was in Constantinople. The capital was there. So Rome only becomes like the figurehead, but it is the capital of the Christian religion. That's where the Pope is. Okay, so what got me on this was I was watching a documentary on the Colosseum, okay? And we got to the last games. I can't remember the name, 401 or something like that. And there's been a big hiatus since the previous games. So one senator decides to invest, he's got vast wealth. He's invested his own personal money to be able to hold the games, to try to revive the old values of the Roman Empire. Okay. Well, the problem is, things are just going wrong left and right. And I think what inspired him to do that was these damn Christians trying to pull down statues. Okay. Because Rome had statues everywhere. Well, keep in mind, every time a Caesar died, he became a god. So you got all these statues of Caesars. Well, they're gods. Okay, there's pagan. These are statues of now that these Caesars now are pagan gods. Well, like the Romans are like, well, I mean, the Christians, they interpret that verse that thou shalt not worship or bow down to any image. You're a lay preacher. Tell me what that verse is again. James, you still there? I think I lost you. Well, anyway, the thing is, it doesn't say that you have to destroy all those images. It just means you do not bow down to them. You do not worship any images. Anyone else wants to? The one thing I like to point out is that, the problem is we get, there are three main religions that believe in the same God: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Okay, and the extreme of all of those is totally intolerant. They're the ones destroying images and things like that. Thing I like to point out is God put two trees in the Garden of Eden and instructed man not to eat of them. If you do, you will. Okay, one tree is a tree of knowledge. You eat of it, you will die. Next to it is a tree of life. So it's like you beat that apple, you go over here and eat this one. They counter each other. No one does that. But the thing is, I said, if God did not want man to have choice, he wouldn't have put the trees here, okay? It's like, this is the way it is. You don't have a choice. No, here, I'm tempting you. Here's the tree. If you eat it, you'll die. Why did he put it there? Because he wants to give man choice. So the commandment is, thou shalt not worship, bow down, or, to graven images. Doesn't mean tear them down. But this is what Christians do, okay? So they start tearing down those damn statues. And that got me to thinking about throughout history, we've been tearing down, that is a sign of intolerance, is tearing down statues. So now it's the Confederates. Remove Confederate statues. We're removing history. Okay, we're going to wake up from this like a drunken stupor and go, what the hell was I thinking when I did that? We destroyed some wonderful statues that while I may not agree with the message, okay, that they're works of art, but it is a part of our history, okay? Well, anyway, so here's the issue. So once Christianity becomes the, not just an accepted religion, becomes the religion of the state, what happens? It becomes totally intolerant. And seriously, it's kind of like you're not allowed to even have fun during this, we have it called the Dark Ages, all right? And seriously, the way, and this is another parallel we have with anybody who deviates or criticizes, even science, Galileo. How does the church control you? Through excommunication. Now you say, all right, so I've been excommunicated. Well, that means you can't take communion. You can't partake in the one most sacred ritual in the Christian church is, eating and drinking of the blood, the flesh of Jesus and the blood, which outsiders would consider ritual cannibalism. But anyway, the fact is, okay, so you can't do that. No, it was much more than that. If you were a king and you were excommunicated, that pretty much implied no one has to do what you tell them to do. And that creates this conflict between there's one king who had to come back and bow down before the Pope to renounce his transgression so he could be. Now, he later, I think, attempts to capture one of the popes, in retaliation. Once he gains enough support, now, this time when he decides to rebel against the Pope, he knows he's got the backing of his loyal followers. But it really isn't until the Protestant Reformation that we have challenges literal challenges to the authority of the Catholic Church. And so, you know, what we, James, you still out there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I am.
Because Father Michael Pacella shared with us an article, but we've heard of it too.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm listening.
That
I'm
if
listening.
Anybody, where we are now, if anybody openly criticizes this alphabet group, they will be excommunicated.
Who is that alphabet group?
An example
group?
Of what I mean by excommunication.
What group are you talking about? What's the alphabet group?
Well, the LGBTQT group, okay? If someone, my favorite, of course, is we've lost our sense of humor, is
right.
Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle is hilarious. He makes, like I said, he makes fun of everybody. He was even challenged to make fun of himself. And I remember watching that skit, and it was hilarious because, you know, they didn't think he would do it. He did. But he likes, you know, and yet he's had friends. He's had transgender friends and stuff like that. And he talks about their shows about that. But because he makes fun of them, he makes fun of everybody, they can't stand him. And as he said, you know, the transgender group wants him killed. Yeah, but we, you know, Father Michael sent us an article about I can't remember, it was a teacher, college teacher, who was not just fired, but labeled in England, who was labeled as a terrorist because he spoke out against that community. All right,
yeah.
We're seeing that now. I mean, I watched something about an author who wrote a book on transgender, and he's talking about medical and scientific facts. And one of the things he pointed out is that group of people has a 40% suicide rate. Okay, now there can be a lot of reasons for it. You know, how other people react to them and stuff like that. Okay, but the fact is he wrote this book. Amazon wouldn't even post it on their page, okay? He's been literally excommunicated, okay?
Yeah.
So we have that going on today. So when we take a group of people who were, you know, initially just wanted to be accepted as equals, now it's you can't even criticize them. Otherwise, you risk being labeled excommunicated, can't get any work published or find a job.
A hater. Yeah, a bigot. Misogynist. Whatever the hell else.
So for me,
so
you take like early Christianity, which, you know, they suffered from intolerance. Once they got into accepted and then they got into control, they become the most abusers of intolerance.
Right.
And I'm seeing a similar parallel with the LGBT group, okay? So
yeah.
Enough of that. Now let's talk about Dick K can eat up an hour.
Yeah, well, you know, just kind of caveating, because I wanted to, you know, to bring a couple incidents up on this, on the LGBTQ thing. Now, when you talk about this guy from, you know, this priest from England, you know, he was excommunicated because he quoted Bible verse that condemns homosexuality as a sin. It's in the Bible, you know, that it is considered a sin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, here's what I will say. You live your life the way you want to live it. You know, if you want to live a life with, you know, in a same-sex marriage, I've never got into their business. Never, 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 never. I mean,
right.
You know, it did not matter to me if you were married, if you were in a civil union. It didn't matter to me. You know, it didn't become an issue until it became a forced doctrine that was taught. Or, like you said, if I'm giving a sermon that, you know, if we really dig into the Bible, and I've got the Bible right here, and we can go right into it and discuss, you know, what you know, our faith tells us about that. Any kind of unnatural affection, that includes animals. You know, that would include.
All right, all right. James, you know, now I'm gonna put on my devil's advocate hat.
All right.
Okay. And I'm not as well versed on the Bible as you are. All right. But now I'm gonna argue this for the sake of showing people this is how we should be discussing this. We should argue this, not say you can't say this. All right. The Old Testament, all that, most of this stuff about homosexuality is all in the Old Testament. All right. And they quote it from in the New Testament. Did Jesus say anything about homosexuality?
No, but it's definitely in the book of Romans. It's definitely in the book of Leviticus.
That's Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
the thing is, you know, so what they're doing, and when Romans. Paul is bashing everything.
Yeah, Galatians, Jude, Mark. Now,
Paul is bashing everything, okay? All right.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
Homosexuality
doesn't even make the top 10. Homosexuality does not even make the 10 commandments.
So let me just say.
But there is one sexual reference in the 10 commandments. What is it? Adultery.
Adultery is
the worst sin. Okay.
Yeah.
Probably next to murder. And I was reading Emanuel Swedenborg, and you know, who conversed with angels, had out of body experience, visited heaven, hell, and all that. And he said the worst sin to commit is adultery because it's a change in lifestyle. Murder? You know, you kill one, unless you're a serial killer, you murder one person, you got it out of your system, you can regret it and all that. But adultery, no. People who commit adultery, they change their lifestyle and become adulterers. And that is hard to recover from. Okay?
Well, you know, the worst sin is, and this is the one, when you become a rejecter of God, you know, when you become someone that, one of the Ten Commandments is to have no other gods before me. You know, that is really the big one, because that's when you have the change of the heart. So you can recover from adultery. You can recover from murder. You can recover from being a thief and being, you know, all of the other issues that are mentioned. But the book of Mark, if you want to know where Jesus comes in the book of Mark, and it says the book of Mark chapter 10, 6 through 9. But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and a mother and be united to his wife. And the two shall become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. So this clearly identifies that the biblical union of a marriage is between a man and a woman. That is where, and then again, the whole New Testament's the book of Romans. Oh my goodness gracious. First Corinthians, you know, again, that's Paul's, Paul fought against the Christians for a long time, just so everybody understands.
Hey, James,
you know,
I think I lost you.
How about now?
Romans is Paul's just.
Can you hear me now?
On everything. He's back. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
He's bashed on Luke.
Okay.
Yeah. I can hear you. You hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got you.
Paul's just bashing on everybody. But here, okay, so I'll counter my counter to what you quoted from Mark is also goes back to Genesis. You know, he creates them man and female, and the whole idea is. It, really look at it, the Old Testament, and that is you cannot procreate without a union with a male and a female. Just can't happen. Just can't happen. So for the species to continue can't happen unless there is procreation between male and female. All right.
Correct.
That's Old Testament stuff. I'm like, okay, so two people of the same sex decide they're going to form a union and they don't want to have kids. Okay.
All right.
There you go. What's this? So I, my argument, you know, on behalf of the Alphabet Group is like, you know, you're talking Old Testament stuff. All right. And the reason they frowned on it is because you cannot prosper this. You can't prosper your race. You can't prosper your religion without having sex between a male and female. Hey, look,
right.
You want to know how the Muslims plan to take over Europe?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Through procreation. They come in, they're going to get their small minority in there,
that.
And
they've
then they're just,
many,
you know, the average European does not produce enough offspring to maintain their population density. And so the Muslims are going to come here and breed like rabbits, and they're going to end up taking over Europe just through that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to the Muslims, you know, when Xerxes, you know, it came into, you know, and went into Greece, and, you know, and you had, you know, that was one, they've did that for a long time. You know, I mean, they've went out and they've tried to do that. Well, you know,
but anyway, without dwelling too much on this, I just wanted to present an argument against, you know, so you're quoting the Bible and I'm going, okay, so, you know, I studied the Bible too, I've read it, and I'm just going to show you some of the arguments against it. And here's the thing. So you can quote the Bible, and I can sit there and I says, I think that was written in, when you look at the context of the time in which that verse was written, or you look at the background of Paul, you know, the fact is I don't remember Jesus ever coming out and condemning homosexuality. Right?
Well, the book of Mark, he definitely laid it out.
You would say you would interpret from the writing of Mark.
No, he
Jesus
pretty much
quote.
Yeah, but he pretty much said that the only union is between
a
man and a
female.
Woman.
Yeah, joined in one. I got that. And you can take that. But anyway, here's the thing. We can discuss this. We don't have to agree on it. We can discuss this, okay? And so I present this argument on the behalf of the Alphabet Group. To show you that, hey, you know, I don't have to agree with you, but you can't use your religion to tell me what I can and cannot do.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
No.
Yeah. Look, so there's where we are. But neither should, if I'm representing the Alphabet Group, neither should my beliefs tell you what you can and cannot believe or say.
So,
that's,
you know,
it's all about tolerance. And the problem is, so I found a pattern with the early Christian church that once they gained acceptance and then they gained, once they gained authority, they became just as intolerant as everybody was before them.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah. Now,
similar pattern with the LGBT group, okay?
You would see, you know, and we've all said in the church services where they just blasted people's, you know, we don't talk about people's lifestyles. You know, I mean, I don't talk about, you know, the people that are living together, they're married or whatever, you know, because quite frankly, here's what I do know. Jesus Christ does not want us to do that. To do is to deliver the message and for people to willingly, because you will not gain salvation unless you make a conscious decision on your own. We can't force it on anybody. You know, I mean, they did that during the Spanish Inquisition.
Right.
You know, you just can't do it.
No, but here's my point. The church has, throughout history, tried to force it on everybody.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Early
in
colonial period. Let's talk about the Puritans of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't disagree with the church. You will be put to death. Okay.
Here's what I will tell you.
We're not talking about being kicked out and have to form your own state or colony. No, they'll put you to death. Okay, so we have we're talking intolerance. We're talking serious consequence. The Spanish loved torture, okay? The Inquisition.
Yeah.
Right?
So I would,
anyway,
I would tell you, the interesting thing about the intolerance is that, you know, it is prevalent on all sides. And you know, the LGBTQ community, especially those that are, you know, that are benefactors of it, you know, they're getting paid, you know, to support that. I mean, they're some of the, I mean, they're really some of the loudest voices in the room. And realistically, they represent a smaller group. They, you know, demographic, you know, demographics will
correct,
prove this.
Correct, correct. That's true.
They
that's
are
true.
So
but it's
small,
a very loud
so,
voice.
Yeah, so
it,
minimal.
It's a very loud voice, and they have a lot of support. And what, all right, the only reason I bring this up is because of the number of people who have been punished, persecuted. But essentially, it's excommunication. It is a new form of excommunication, all right? When people get fired, they get to where they cannot publish a book. Dave Chappelle, go and listen to him talk about the, you know, this community. And he'll sit there and he'll describe his friends from that community.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the fact that he makes fun of them, he makes fun of them. But he is not allowed to make fun of them. And so they are doing their best to excommunicate him, if not kill him. He jokes about that. Okay.
Well, they would kill him if they could. I'm going to tell you, they would kill you. I mean, there is a case right now where a gentleman, a Democrat, you know, murdered a newspaper reporter because he printed an article when he ran for office about, you know, some of his sexual practices and a potential mental disorder. And obviously that proved out because he was crazy as could be, because he would disguise himself and walked around till he got the opportunity and he stabbed the guy to death. Well, you know, his big thing is, well, I didn't use a gun. You know, I'm against guns. Well, hell, you still killed the guy. You killed him with a knife. You know what I mean? And basically, it proved our point, the Second Amendment, folks, that, hell, you don't have – it's not the gun. It's the people. You want to kill somebody.
Hey,
this is
did you read about the mass killing in Saskatchewan, Canada?
No, I haven't.
Killed, 17 injured. Guess what the weapon was?
What, a knife or a hammer?
Knife. Yeah. You know, because the people that argue for gun control say – the thing is, England is trying to ban pointy knives. The evidence shows that banning guns does not reduce murders. Reduces murders by guns. It does not reduce murders. In fact, other crimes like rape and theft increase.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But it does not have a change in murders. They just go to a different weapon. Hammers and knives. Hammers and knives.
Well,
and so England is now trying to ban. There was at one point where London had more murders than New York City with knives. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to ban pointy knives. But the argument for the people who go, the problem is it's too easy to walk into a schoolyard with an AR-15 and kill all these kids. You can't kill that many people with a knife. And I'm like, well, we just got an example in Canada last week, okay? 10 killed, 17 wounded, okay? From a knife, two brothers in a knife attack, okay? It does happen. It does happen. Okay?
Now, I would be interested.
And we had a show about that. We had a show previously about that, about mass school shootings. And it doesn't matter what the weapon is. If you want to reduce the number of, you know, these mass shootings, you would have to confiscate every weapon. That's the only
and you
weapon.
Still wouldn't do
okay?
that. Look,
and now we're finding out, now they ain't going to stop it because they'll just, you know, they'll go in with, okay, what are other weapons for mass killings?
Your hands.
Trucks.
Your dang
knives.
Your hands, too,
okay?
I mean.
And bombs, okay? Yeah.
Literally, you could choke a bunch of people to death. You know, I mean, a baseball battle.
Yeah, you could, but we don't have a case. It takes too, trust me, takes too long. It takes too long, okay? Right? Because we have cases of people driving trucks through crowds, cars through crowds. We already know about bombings. Okay. So, yeah.
So
we've
had
a show with that.
Listen, the problem with all of this, you know, is the heart of the people. So
yeah,
let's go back to
go.
What we
there
were
we
talking
go.
About. We were talking about, you know, the LGBTQ community that have now become the excommunicators. If you stand up and say,
right.
and, you know, something as simple as,
they've become a religion. They've essentially become a religion.
They have the
cult status of a religion now. So they can have people
So if I would say, you can live your life the way you see fit, but I don't support that for myself. You know, that's not
right.
who I am, but you live the way you live. I will not discriminate against you. I will, I won't go ooh when I walk by you. I never have done that.
Right.
But if I even say my beliefs on that, that will get you excommunicated now. That will get you crashed on Facebook, social media, but so will telling people that you don't agree with the January 6th event, and I didn't agree with the Portland. I don't agree with these mass demonstrations that involve the destruction of other people's property.
Wait. Okay, now, that's a good segue. That's a good segue to dictatorships. Okay. Okay, when you cite the January 6th, I haven't seen anyone excommunicated. There's another term for it. What? All right, so tell me.
Let me tell you what happens to you when
ahead.
You mention.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to you is that they trash you on social media. I went through that for about 2 years. Then they will hurt your ability to work. I mean, listen, they will go and tell.
Wait a minute. Who's going to hurt your ability to work?
Just like the LGBTQ community does, man.
No, they say,
don't hire this guy.
Who's going to hurt whose ability to work?
Anybody that doesn't like, that's in a position that can influence others, if they don't like your
position.
The thing
is, this is a right and left. This is an extreme right and extreme left position. So if you are pro January 6th, you would only be ostracized by actually, that's where we're at. It's the extreme left of the Democratic Party that is trying now, based on Biden's speech, to now make a unified. See, that's the problem. The Democratic Party is split between the moderates and the progressives. And Biden's speech, his fear-mongering speech, which I would like to talk about in the 40 minutes we have, is about how dictators come to power, is that they rally people behind their fear or hatred for a single group. Okay. So what that would mean is if you're pro or supportive of what happened on January 6th, you couldn't get a job from somebody who's a Democrat or whatever. Okay. But if you believe Biden is legitimately elected president, well, hey, look, if you're on the extreme, you're going to have problems holding the job. Actually, I don't think the extreme right fires anybody. I haven't heard any cases of that. They'll criticize you and all that, right? They'll bash on you, but that's why I say we are. To me, that's not the excommunication. That is, we are heading towards a civil war. Actually, we're already in it. I believe we're already in it. Everybody's taken sides, and Biden's speech has now really split it down the middle. But because the Republicans they know, Biden knew that his party is split between the progressives and the moderates. He has to unite them behind their common hatred and fear of Trump. So he's done that. But what he's done is the Republican Party already knew that they have to remain a united party. And so when you condemn the MAGA Republicans, you have essentially alienated the entire Republican Party. And he split it, okay? So to me, that's not the same as excommunication. It's more you're just a casualty of the Civil War, okay?
Yeah, well, and you know, I will say that the left, they have mastered social media. You know, just go to Twitter and say, God bless America. Just go on there and say, God bless America, and see what the hell happens.
All right.
You know what I mean?
All right. I'm glad. Okay, so now let's start talking about how dictators gain power. Because, I sent you several articles that I was reading. Okay, and these are based on studies by sociologists and historians. And there was some things they were all in agreement with. I'll tell you one of them. Control information. Control the media. Propaganda. Now, all politicians lie. Now, there are some good ones, but they're not the ones in the mainstream. But the thing is, politicians twist the truth and promise things they can't deliver. But what I'm talking about is where is if you're going to be a Democrat, if you're going to become a dictator, you have to control the message. You have to control the information. I'm reading a book right now, Pierre Esselin, on the Vietnam's American War. And he's a Canadian who went, he's going to study, you know, when he was working on his PhD, he decided to specialize in the Vietnam War. And his professor, who is his mentor or whatever, said, then focus on the Vietnamese side because no one's done that. And he went over there and he did a lot of research. Very good. I'm reading his book. And there's a lot of patterns with the Communist Party. But if you look at North Vietnam, I mean, throughout history, starting with the Russian Revolution, control the flow of information, control what people know, only allow your side to be told. Young men were being drafted into the North the PAVN, People's Army of Vietnam. We call it the NVA. Shit south, and their parents, their families would never hear from them again. There's no news.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to write home. Okay. If they died, they might or might not hear about it. I mean, total suppression of news. Of information. All these dictatorships do that. Everyone, and that was the commonality of all of them, control the flow of information. Only allow your side of the story to be told. Is that happening today? Has that been happening today? Have we had a suppression of freedom of speech?
Oh yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's yes. You know, I listen, I just had a suppression of freedom of speech today on Facebook, you know, trying to pay to have an article run on Vets for Vet Leadership, just basically an article saying, you know, drawing people to our website. There is nothing.
Wait, what happened? Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, so, you know, I laid down the money and said, hey,
right.
I want to run an article on Facebook. And they came back and said, we reject it because, you know, it's a political organization. I said, no, it's not a partisan political organization. But because they look at it and they don't believe in
All right, you're on track.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now keep in mind, Facebook and Twitter suppressed the Hunter Biden laptop story, claiming it was fake news. And now everybody's coming out and saying, not only are they coming out, the FBI is investigating it. But it was originally suppressed during the election as fake news without any research or evidence. What is that? Explain to me what just happened.
So what happened was is that they automatically pull it up and they see, oh, they support national security. They mention energy independence. You know what we mention on our site. There's nothing against abortion. We don't talk about any of that BS, gay marriage, any of that other stuff. We don't even get into that. But what we talk about is we did mention border security. Listen, a nation without borders is not a nation. I'm sorry. It is not.
Right.
If you don't have borders and you don't have security, then you have every Yahoo in the world coming in. And the effects of that we felt on 9/11 because, you know, we had, you know, 8 years of just, you know, balls to the wall. You just come in, travel across the border, do whatever you want, you know, and look where that got us. So I think that I was suppressed. I know I was suppressed where they didn't even, they don't want your money. You know, it had nothing to do with the money.
Basically, so you have Facebook and Twitter.
Twitter
are controlling the narrative. They are controlling the 100%. Narrative. They are controlling 100%. What is going to be said and what's not going to be said. They have fact checkers. It's like if what you say, and what we're finding is, it's not that what you say is wrong, because we already know the most blatant case, and there's several others again, but the most blatant case is the Hunter Biden laptop story, okay? Suppressed because they believed it was fake news generated by the Russians, and when in reality is no. It is as true as it can be, and it's being investigated by the FBI, and when the Republicans get control of the House, we are going to see hearings on that. Okay.
Now, right.
That is suppression. That is controlling the narrative. That is two major sources of exchange of information controlling the narrative. That's how dictatorships rise to power.
Yeah.
And they all do it. That's the thing is, you look at, examine all dictatorships, it is controlling the source of information. Okay. Now, fortunately, we have freedom of the problem is when it comes to social media, it's now Trump's webpage. I don't know what it is. It hasn't taken off. But, you know, you look at the main, you know, there is a monopoly, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever. And they have a left leaning. So while the left, the Democrats, the liberals don't control this, what they have is the monopoly of these organizations. They are very supportive of the left story, and so they become a tool of one party. Right now, but there is not, okay, so Twitter may ban those stories. Guess what? All that information is out there. One common thing with the rise of all dictatorships is controlling the narrative. All the information is out there. If you do your homework on the internet, you go in and look, don't take anything face value. Examine it, question it. Train yourself to, like, that just doesn't sound right. When you say that, then go do your homework. The truth is out there. Okay.
Well, here's a comment that just came up on Twitter. It says Democrats can draw true parallels between fascism and Trumpism, but that's not possible for to draw a parallels between American Democrats and communists. And it's like, this is the ignorance that breeds ignorance, because if they cannot see, if they, I mean, that the very statement that this person makes on Twitter, you know, blasting it out, is, that's exactly what the communists did.
I think I lost you.
How about now?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can. Okay. Yes, I can.
All right. So did you hear what I said about that? So the
I lost you after Democrats and socialism or communism.
Yeah. Well, there. So this guy blasts out on Twitter, says about fascism. He says, I've always said that, wondered how fascists use socialism and communism, not fully understanding the meaning. But we can draw true parallels. He's associating himself as either a socialist or a communist, because he says, but we can draw true parallels between fascism and Trumpism, something not possible between American Democrats and communists, as if, you know, he's saying that no one's able to show that the drift of the American Democrat Party towards socialism and communism, which he's either blind or he's just basically
ignorant,
you know,
of history. He's ignorant of history.
Yes.
Here's the thing. All right. For our listening audience, the things I'm telling you is not just my opinion. Just go up and type, just go on Google and type in how dictators come to power, anything related to that. And what you'll find is articles on not just how dictators come to power, but how dictators stay in power. And they will cite, they summarize all these studies done by sociologists and historians. Okay. And that's what I'm, so when James said, hey, I'd done a lot of homework. No, guys, all I did was I went online and I am a historian. I'm familiar with this, but look, I'm no boxer. I've been hit in the head so damn many times. I have memory problems. So I have to go into, I have to jog my memory and read up on it, okay? So I'm summarizing a lot of the things that I read up, you know, getting ready for this show. Okay, so fast dictator. All right, I really like what you just said, because it points out there's two forms of dictatorships. One is a single person, a megalomaniac. Most of your true dictators are narcissists. And yes, Trump fits the pattern, okay? He fits the description.
Sure.
He's a narcissist. He's a megalomaniac. Now, the Trump that won the election in 2016, yes, he was a narcissist, all that, but he did not, nothing else he did fit the pattern of a dictator, okay? But I'm telling you right now, he's laying the groundwork because of what happened in the last election, okay? And the thing is, when you listen to the January 6th committee, what the one constant thing that everybody's going to agree on, all right, Trump really believed he won, okay? You know, it's not like he's trying to steal the election. He's trying to overturn the Constitution. No, he really thinks he won. He believed the big lie, okay? He believed he won and that election was stolen, and he was, in his own mind, legitimately trying to hold on to the power because he believed the truth would come out. Okay, tools. Some of the tools dictators use to gain, we already know the narrative, control the narrative, control. Now all politicians do this, but what we are seeing now more than ever before. I mean, people are only getting their, most people, if you go, I'm telling you, if you, all you get your news from is TV, you are guilty, because there, unless you're watching BBC or Univision, all your sources are biased. They're leaning left or right. That's it. That's
sure.
it. You're not getting the truth. Fox is not telling you the truth. CNN, MSNBC is not telling you the truth. Okay. PBS, I think, is PBS doesn't go into everything, but I think PBS is fairly unbiased. Axios, you want to know what I get? I read Axios. If you guys do not subscribe to it, Axios is, I mean, what it does is a real, if you don't have a lot of time to read, that is it. It will give you the headlines. You only have to read maybe, you know, you'll get one or two of those a day. You can go through there, hit the headlines. It gives you in short, you know, sentences or couple sentences will tell you the meat of what's going on. Okay. And overall, I'm going to say it is as close to being as unbiased as possible. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Axios. So look that up. And then if you, and you can click on, they'll say you want to read more, click here. The internet has the truth out there. You've just got to hunt for it. All right. But the if you get your news from TV, you're being subject. Another thing that the dictators, when you talk about the individual dictator, now we're going to get to the fascists or whatever, not the party. Because when we look at party dictatorship, that's when we're looking at the rise of the Communist Party. And that's in Russia, China, I'm reading a book on Vietnam. And generally you'll have whoever is elected to the party leadership is elected for life. Well, they may not be. They have runoff, but nobody's going to run against them. But it is basically a one-party system. All right. So control the narrative, but another thing is eliminate the competition. And one of the things of finding like what Trump is doing is doing what happened in several things happened when he was a president. One is the Democrats went, I mean, they trumped up investigation after investigation. They weaponized the FBI fell. So that's another thing about rise of dictatorships. Most dictatorships rise through their control of the military. Many of your dictators are former heads of the military. Now, fortunately for our country, thank God, you and I were officers. We go through an education process that because being an officer, being a soldier is a profession.
Sure.
And we part of that profession, we have it drilled into us this respect for the seniority of the civilian leadership. Okay. The Army is supposed to be apolitical. And I would tell you when Clinton got elected, gag order. The Army came down. You cannot, because he's in your chain of command, you cannot criticize the president. All right? There was a gag order. There was a gag order when Obama was the president. They always issue these gag orders when we get a Democrat as a president because the majority of the military tends to be conservative. Okay? Well, here's the deal. But you're reminded that your oath. What is our oath? When you raise your right hand, you swear to defend what? The Constitution?
The Constitution,
And? I swear to defend the Constitution and the lawful orders of basically everybody in your chain of command, which includes the President
the
of
officers,
the United States.
Because, the officers appointed over you. Now, the enlisted, that's good that you bring that up, but the officer's oath is different than the enlisted oath. The officer's oath does not specifically point out the president where the enlisted oath does.
Yeah.
So I always thought that, and that is in case you got a rogue president in there. You know what I mean? That
you know, that, you're...
Well, the thing is, yeah, we do not, like, you know, like Germany, they swore an oath to the Führer. We don't swear an oath to the president. We swear an oath to defend the Constitution and obey the lawful orders of everybody in our chain of command, okay? So the president, the general, or commanding officer cannot give us an order that violates any law or the Constitution, okay? So that's what makes us different. And this is why you will not see a military coup d'etat in this country.
Right.
So whereas other dictators, how they rise to power is by through control of the military. In our country, we have a different tradition, and that is the weaponization of certain government agencies. Would you like to venture to guess which agencies we have weaponized?
Well, I know the FBI is one of them for sure.
That's right. Okay. Now, even Trump is going to admit that all the lower ranking people in the FBI are they come in it with their great values and they're good. But the upper echelons has been weaponized. Now, I will tell you this. It's probably that's inherent in their culture. Keep in mind, one of the things that when Washington became the commanding general of the Continental Army, the commander in chief, he knew our country had an inherent fear of military dictatorships. And so he set the tradition for the American military. You know, Congress approved all the general officers. He went to the Congress to approve for everything, okay? Yes, he could have, especially the Nuremberg uprising, he could mutiny. He could have become a military dictator. But he never forgot what the prize was, the brass ring, okay? And always subordinating himself to Congress. Okay. But if you look at J. Edgar Hoover, that man had files on every politician.
Yeah.
The FBI, the culture of the FBI from J. Edgar Hoover was politics. So I am not surprised that the FBI upper leadership would be susceptible to becoming weaponized by politics. There's another government agency that has been used to go after political enemies. Which one was that? Obama did it. And I think, I don't know if Clinton's, Obama did it. Oh, his.
Well, I mean, you know.
The IRS.
Oh, yeah.
The IRS
well,
targeted
no.
conservative groups. The IRS targeted.
Yeah, Clinton did it too. I mean, but he did it primarily against these religious communities and sects. That's where
yeah,
you're
that's
at.
Right. That's right. That, I was going to say
he
that's
weaponized
probably the church.
ATF.
Yes.
ATF.
Yes.
Alcohol.
Now let's
I'm
look
sorry.
At it. What has Biden just done? What has Biden just done? He just got a bill passed to increase the size of the IRS.
Well, oh, terrible. Yeah.
807,000 new agents or 87,000 new agents. We don't have that many billionaires. You think we need that many new IRS agents to go after billionaires? No. They need that many. They're coming after you, me, and every small business owner. You want to talk about weaponization of the IRS? We are about to see it. And the third agency is the Department of Justice. Okay.
Yes.
It has become a tool of politics. All right. So when you look at the pattern of other countries, it's always the military. Thank God we got it. You know, thank George Washington. Thank George Washington that our military has an apolitical tradition of subordination, and we are constantly educated to that. We are very respectful. We are taught about posse comitatus, how we do not ever, you know, that was one thing I remember going through the courses at West Point. We want to avoid enforcing or suppressing civil disturbance, disobedience, and stuff like that. We are a last result. We do not want to get into that. Now, I'm going to tell you, all right, so when I, we, all right, yes, when I cited the weaponization of government agencies such as the IRS, DOJ, and the FBI, I cited Democratic administrations. They are not the only, the Democrats aren't the only guilty ones, okay? They have been more successful at it. Nixon, who was a Republican, he definitely wanted to suppress any opposition to the Vietnam War, okay? Senator Joe McCarthy went after anybody suspected of being an enemy of the state, a communist, was a Republican. So both parties are guilty, finding as a pattern that it's the Democratic Party that is really trying to weaponize that. Now, I want to give you this. If you look at what's happened since Trump got lost the election, that there are two things that's taken place. One of them, you see how he is giving his when anyone's running for Congress or senator and he is not sponsoring, I support, that's it. He supports this candidate, okay? He's lining it up. Because all these people he comes in and throws his support in and they get elected, they owe him. If he runs again for president in 2024, there's a lot congressmen and senators who are going to owe him. And I forgot what this one law or bill that was passed or that he plans to use it to, because he fell victim of it with all those, and you know, the Democrats got to blame themselves for it. When they weaponize, you know, he's the president and he's got all these, you know, former pro, you know, Obama. I mean, what happened, what I suspect is most of the time when the Republicans get into office, they just leave the agencies alone and kind of pick their people afraid, but they do not try to change and weaponizing it is, and I will tell you this with Clinton, there was a purge of general officers. A lot of the rising stars retired. And instead, you had all these general officers who were appointed, rose up in place. Because Clinton was appointing people that he identified. Everybody else, I think, is kind of like, hey, whatever they recommend will apply. But no, Clinton's like, no, I don't like your political views, so I'm going to appoint someone. So the people that were rising up were not the people that we all anticipated. Because I had one of my favorite generals who never made it past one star, and he was four-star material. Okay. And we're tending to find that. All right. But anyway, if Trump gets elected, he plans to use that, and he's going to purge. That's what we really believe. He is going to purge all these government agencies of people who are opposed to him. Now, if you look at the rise of dictatorships, I'm going to tell you, when Trump won the election in 2016, he's a megalomaniac and all this stuff. That's the deal. But I'm saying one of the things that dictators have to do is disarm everybody. Well, the guy's pro Second Amendment. He also got to suppress freedom of speech, control the message. No, this guy was more outspoken. He never tried to suppress. He criticized. He would bash the other side, but he never tried to suppress it. It's only been the left that has tried to suppress freedom of speech, and they did it through political correctness. And now, if we're talking about, like, with the earlier part of the show, the Alphabet Group, it's now excommunication, right? But I'm telling you right now, so when you look at, okay, propaganda, control the narrative, control the information. See, nobody talks anymore. If you're on social media or whatever, I don't have any liberal friends. I would tell you why. It's not me. I didn't cut them off because I keep beating them in debates. They excommunicated me. No, I love debate. I have one. And he's not really liberal. He's a Trump hater, and he has personal reasons to hate Trump, and I like him. Retired TC Colonel General, you know, Colonel Terry Teal, have great admiration for him. We love to debate, okay? And we do it all offline. We do it on – he's the only person I've got that I can have a good debate with. But no longer. I do not have one single liberal left-leaning friend left on social media that I can have a debate with, because everybody wants to live in that echo chamber. They have all excommunicated me, okay? So they can't hear my side of the story. And so what you have is you got all these Trump followers, they're only hearing one narrative. Nobody's listening to the other side. And you got all these people on the left, the liberals, the Democrats, they ain't listen to people in any of the debate on the right side. So we have all chosen, voluntarily limited our input information. And now we are subject to propaganda. So yes, Trump, you know, he didn't suppress the left, the voice of the left. No, everybody suppressed them, and now they're only listening to one voice. Okay, but I mean, this guy is laying the groundwork that, he could be a dictator, okay? And he has the pattern. He has the personality for that. But now let's look at the rise of the Communist Party, okay? So we talk about a party. So what are some of the things that so we talk about control the narrative, control the flow of information. Another thing they'll do is rally. See, if you don't have something, tool you use is to rally everybody around you is fear or hatred of a single group or person or whatever. It could be a war, all right? But like Hitler used hatred of the Jews. The communist, of course, is hatred of the rich, the elite. The book I'm reading now on the Vietnam American War, we're talking about North Vietnam. They rallied the people around. Okay, they've already beat the French, drove them out. Now it's the Americans. The Americans are the new imperialists. But yet, their strategy was not to engage the American army because they knew they'd get beat, but was to go after the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. So it was, you were drafted into the army under this guise of fighting the American imperialists, when in reality you went south to try to kill other Vietnamese and avoid contact with the Americans. Tool of dictators is to rally people around a fear, a common fear or hatred of an individual or group. And Biden just gave that speech. He summed it up right there. Okay. Another one is, and this is definitely this is how the Communist Party has done. But, and even then with Hitler and other groups is, okay, so we live in a time of chaos. Okay, we live in a time of economic despair. We're the only ones who can solve your problem. Well, how we do it is we make you entirely dependent on us for your livelihood. We'll provide you a safe environment if you allow us to control every aspect of your life. We will provide you a steady income or whatever that if you trust on us. There's only one party that does that, and that's the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is definitely for big government, whereas what that means is they want people entirely dependent on the government for everything, for medical, there are people who are politicians proposing a universal income, okay? But these are common traits. This is how the communists have risen to power in all these other countries. I can make your life simple. And in some of those articles are read, people, you know, one study showed that people are willing to sacrifice a lot of their freedoms for stability.
We got a minute and a half, Rich.
Oh, my God.
A minute and a half. We're going to have to close it out. All right, folks. Thanks for joining us on Continue Mission. Rich, I think we had a pretty good debate tonight and had some great talking points. Get on social media, folks. Express yourself. Don't let, you know, one side hog one side or the other. And look, people have died to give you your right to be able to express yourself. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that you go out and insult people just because you don't agree with what they say. Believe me, I see it all the time on Twitter. All you have to do is get on there. Twitter's the worst. So if you are a Christian, if you believe in the U.S. Constitution, if you believe in the American dream, don't be surprised if you go on Twitter and you say, God bless America, and you don't get attacked by a bunch of teachers and socialist Democrats and some of these other names, the Penelope and all these other people, because that's all you have to say to trigger them. And that is the sad reality of where we have for saying God bless and America, three words that just tear the heart out of a liberal, socialist, communist. So say it every chance you get. God bless America. Have a great weekend.